I'm going to be talking about how the macronutrients affects the susceptibility of Helicobacter baziae to a species-specific MPV, which is Helicobacter pyramidra nucleopolyhedrovirus. So Helicobacter baziae has many common names, the cotton bollworm, tomato fruitworm, sorghum headworm. It's a prolificous pest. It feeds on multiple crops. It's in the family Noctuidae. It causes both defoliation and fruit damage, which results in indirect as well as direct loss, yield losses. It's a primary pest in many crops. And it also develops resistance to insecticides rather quickly, most recently to pyrethroids and to certain BT toxins. And this leads to a continual need for a novel control tactic. The most recent novel control tactic or resurgence is in NPV, which is here NPV. This is currently a commercially available crop that, or product that's used in soybeans and sorghum. It's capable of disseminating in a soybean field up to 200 feet in 3 days. And it's also capable of sustained epizootics when the environmental conditions are favorable. It does require 3 to 10 days for mortality to occur in certain insect or in certain larval instars. After half-inch larvae, the virus is usually no longer mortal to the insect, and it doesn't really affect adults. It's not currently recommended in cotton. And why not cotton? So historically in cotton, here in PV has been highly variable. Some growers will report 90% efficacy on certain crops at certain times, and then other growers won't even get 30% efficacy. And usually the efficacy is low. It's not usually that 90%. It's usually around the 30%. Back in the 70s, McLeod et al. Found that there was a phenomenon that occurred when the dew on the leaves of the cotton evaporated. It reached a high enough pH to deactivate the virus. And this is a form of keeping the infection from occurring. So this deactivation or degradation is keeping the virus from actually infecting the host. You're not actually getting a successful colonization. But my question was, is there potentially an effect once the colonization has occurred based on the nutritional components of the crops that is keeping the pathogen from actually successfully infecting after colonization has begun? And so that brings us to this picture, which is a soybean field. This is a monoculture. You might not think there's a lot of variability in the nutritional landscape available to that insect pest, but in fact, there is. Old leaf tissue has different protein to carbohydrate ratios than new leaf tissue, which has different protein to carbohydrate ratios from seeds and pods and stems and so on and so forth. This means that the insect is actually capable of choosing what he's eating, what he's feeding on, and altering his intake to a certain intake target. And this graph represents that, what I just told you in graphical form. So the bullseye there is the intake target of Zaya, and those other points are closely related species. You have dietary carbs on the y-axis and dietary protein on the x-axis. So as that caterpillar's feeding, he's migrating towards a intake target. This is also the same for corn and cotton, but specifically corn usually, corn does have lower protein to carbohydrate ratios, so it's more rich in carbs and proteins, whereas cotton is the exact opposite. It has higher protein to carb ratio, so more protein versus carbs. And in fact, cotton actually has the intake target of Zaya, which is 1.6 on multiple of its tissues. This implies that cotton would be a more nutritionally favorable host to Zaya than corn would be. And this carries over into the immunology aspect because the nutrition directly affects the way that the insect is able to combat pathogens. So an insect should alter their intake to maximize their survival, and that means that the immune system also reacts differently based on diet. So a carb-heavy diet will induce certain immune responses versus a protein-heavy diet. And it's been found in Spidoptera exigua that the higher protein diets led to an increased survivalship for MPVs versus low-protein diets. And even in Helicobacter baziae and Armidra with BT toxins, they found the same nutrition alteration. So the objective of my study was to determine if this variation in diet protein carbohydrate content would affect the susceptibility of the Zaya larvae to here MPV. So is what they're eating affecting their survivability? I did this by conducting a no-choice assay with 7 different protein to carb ratios. So I have 2 that are protein rich. I have on the board there, 2616 is the intake target, that 1.6 to 6, or 1.6 to 1. And then 2121 represents a 1 to 1 ratio. And then I have the inverse of the intake target, and then two carb-rich diets. So I wanted that whole skew of that graph of the nutritional landscape. I've infected both neonates and third instar larvae in two different experiments. Neonates were infected 24 hours after emergence from their eggs. Third instars were infected 24 hours after emerging from the molt. This was done by surface contamination with a known virus concentration and a known amount of water solution. Diet was replaced every 3 days for the neonate. There was no way to determine how much or if any of the diet that the neonate had actually consumed. But for third instars, if they didn't eat the whole diet cube within 24 hours, they were removed from the experiment. And then time to mortality was recorded, and it was all analyzed using Jump Pro 14. So this graph is a little bit busy, but this is the Kaplan-Meier survival curves for each of the diets. The main thing to see here, though, is that purple and black line up on top. Those are the protein-rich diets, and the survival of the purple line especially was significantly higher than the survival of any of the other lines. And if you notice on the black line, there is a sharp decline. The other diets actually have longer survival than that one. But initially, that one has better survival. And these were all significant interactions. This is for first instars. When I repeated this with third instars, I saw that same general trend. The high-protein diet lasted the longest. They survived best. And there was still a sharp decline with that black line there, which is the 2814. but it was a little cluttered, so I went ahead and combined those proteins. So the two high proteins I clumped together into a high-protein single curve. The neutral protein represents the intake target, the 1-to-1 ratio, and then the intake target's inverse, and then the low proteins are the inverse of the high proteins. And you see that same trend where the higher protein diets did, in fact, cause the insect to survive longer, even though it was infected with HERMPV. And this also carried over to the third instar larvae. That we saw the same trend. The higher protein diet caused the insect to survive the infection longer. So specifically to corn and cotton, because that was what I referred to in the introduction, 1428, so 14 protein, 28 carb, represents about what you would think of when you were with cotton, and 2616 is the intake target, and that would be, the 1428 is corn, and the 2616 is cotton. And so this graph represents first instar survival on diets replicating or simulating both cotton and corn. And this is with first instars, it's very clear that on cotton they're surviving longer, or on nutritional diets correlated with cotton they're surviving longer. And it once again holds true, and both all these interactions are significant, by the way, and I do have the p-values there. Here the cotton is definitely... it added about a day to their lifespan. So, coming back to our objective, which was to determine if variation in the diet protein to carb content affected the susceptibility of the Zea larvae to HERMPV, it does seem to. So larvae that were reared on those higher protein diets were capable of surviving the infection longer than larvae that were reared on high carb diets. And the variation in the diet does appear to affect the larval susceptibility. And this nutritional effect could help explain this variation that we're seeing among the different crops. So back to the original thing, maybe the dew evaporating from the leaf is reducing the dosage that the insect gets, but also being on cotton, maybe the nutritional value that it's already able to acquire is keeping the infection from establishing as rapidly as it would in another host or another crop. And so future directions where we'd like to go with this is to utilize a third instar choice assay. So we can actually see what the insect will regulate to rather than forcing it to regulate to a certain target. I have data to analyze the daily consumption rates to make sure they're actually feeding after they become infected, and to make sure that they're not trying to alter their immune system through starvation or some other method, but that I know what they're consuming and that they're not consuming a different rate. And then finally, to conduct immune function assays, so determine if the protein-heavy diet larvae are actually upregulating a different immune response than the carb-heavy diets. But all these things will lead to this overarching question, which is this self-medication, compensatory feeding, or host manipulation? So is this the insect recognizing that it's infected, altering its diet, or choosing a protein-rich diet to fight that infection? Is it just simply eating more because the infection is taking resources from it and it's needing to compensate for that? Or is the virus actually manipulating the host to produce more progeny for itself? With that, I would like to thank AgBiTech for the virus, all the people that helped me, the Sword Lab, Texas A&M AgriLife, and I will take any questions.
All right, well, let's thank Joe.